Continuing along in this brief sermon series on our values as a church, which I hope will be your values as a human being. I hope that you'll find a way to incorporate these into your walk of faith. And today, I want to talk about this cup, and I want to talk about doing hard things, because that is something that we have all been called to do. To do hard things. And some of you are going to say, wait a minute, I got enough hardness in my life. Thank you very much. In which case, I hope you understand, right, that everything that is going on in your life is a part of what God is doing in you and through you. That it was for such a time as this that he put you where you are to be a person of faith. And one of the things about doing hard things is simply to embrace them and to welcome them, because you know that you are never alone, because he's with you. So let's turn to our scriptures for the day. There are two of them that I want to share with you. Matthew 20:20 to 28, and then Matthew 26:27. And this is what stands written in Matthew 20:28. And then the mother of Zebedee's sons, remember them? They were James and John. And they came to Jesus, the mother came to Jesus with her sons, and kneeling down asked a favor of him. And all I can say is, can you imagine how embarrassing it would be to be a big hulking fisherman, you know, and to have your mother? And I imagine a small, you know, Jewish lady. Okay, basically, you know, bringing these big hulking boys by the scruff of the neck, if you will, or by the earlobe, or however it is that she does it in her family. And then, you know, she comes to their boss, basically, you know, their teacher, their rabbi, and she said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your kingdom. And Jesus said, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I am going to drink? And they answered, we can. And Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. And when the 10, the other disciples, heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. And Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and that their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. And just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And then again in Matthew 26:27, and then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it with you in my Father's kingdom. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. I want to talk to you about this cup. Sometimes people say, well, my cup's empty. I need to get my cup filled. And, okay, that's good. I need to get my cup filled. Who is going to fill your cup? And whose cup are you going to fill it from? Anybody? Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's church, right? Jesus is usually a safe answer, right? So when your cup is empty, who is going to fill your cup? Thank you. Now the question is, what's in his cup? Okay, remember, because Jesus is talking about a cup as if it is his life, his ministry, his destiny. And he's pouring that into your cup. You all agreed. So what's in his cup? Remember that his ministry kind of begins by being alienated from his family. Really? You don't remember that? Don't you remember that sweet old Mary came with her sons and daughters and camped out in front of the house where Jesus was teaching and said, you're crazy, son. They came, they're worried about him. They came to take him away. Why? Because he's going around preaching. And what's he preaching about? Himself. Can you imagine? I mean, this is the thing, people. Look, you have got to be in the book. Because you have got to understand these things. The number one thing that Jesus talks about, number one topic, is himself. And you see, these days, right, everybody would be scandalized. And I think they were then too. How can you say these things about yourself? Who are you, God? And of course, for Jesus, that's a rhetorical question. But for the people, they couldn't figure it out. Think about that. Think about what's in Jesus' cup. He was always misunderstood. I want you to think about something else about Jesus. Everybody is always telling Jesus that he did it wrong. Always. It's hard to be Jesus. It really is. And then I want you to think about all the people who should have been on his side. His own people. Today we call them church people. And they came from like three different denominations. Sadducees, Pharisees, and Essenes. And they all thought that he got it wrong. And so he had to stand alone. And all the more so, right, because his disciples who were with him day and night for 3 years, who pledged on that night in which he was betrayed that they would go down with the ship and that if he was arrested, they would be and they would die if he died and they would fight for him and all the rest. And then the soldiers came and they arrested him. And what happened to all those good friends? They don't slithered off into the darkness. They ran away. You know what it's like to be abandoned? Ever been let down by your friends? Imagine the most important night of your life. The night when you have to stand. The night when the devil is tempting you the hardest. And there you are. Turns out it's you and the Father. That's what's in this cup. One of them, friends, sold him out for money. Have you ever been sold out for money? If you have, I want to talk to you after the service because I want to understand what that might feel like. Can you imagine? Man. And then, you know, they arrested him. 3 kangaroo trials, right? Falsely accused, lying witnesses, the whole shebang. It's a perfect setup. Here's the God who created heaven and earth being tried by his creatures. Can you imagine? That's in the cup. And then pronounced guilty, he was taken out and he was beaten, he was flogged, he was spit upon. It's in the cup. And then he was crucified. It's in the cup. Nails driven in his hands, feet. It's in the cup. And then, yeah, but he got to rise again. Yeah, but even when he appeared to them, did they believe it? Can you imagine the letdown? I mean, purely from a human perspective, you know? Who is it? Is it a ghost? It's all in the cup. And what else is in the cup is this amazing unconditional love. Because through it all, he loved them. Through it all, he spoke words of promise into their lives. Through it all, he didn't give up on them in the moment, but instead focused on who they would become. It's incredible. And I'll tell you, have you tried unconditional love? I think it's very hard. This is not an easy cup. And so when I think about this cup of Jesus, I think about these two things. One is, I think about amazing grace. I think that you will never understand the gospel If you don't understand what you deserve and who you really are, you don't deserve good things in your life. I don't. None of us do. And the reason is because no matter how good we try to be, we fall short of God's standards. At the end of the day, the simple fact of the matter is that you and I are sinners. And we cannot, under any circumstances, by any act that we could commit, by any sacrifice that we could make, save ourselves. That's just the truth. And it's a hard truth to understand. And honestly, I'll tell you, I think it's really hard for church people, especially if we've grown up in the church, because so many of us have never done anything wrong. I mean, really wrong, right? And you remember the rich young man who came to Jesus and he said, "What must I do to be saved?" And Jesus said, "You should keep the commandments. You should honor your father and mother. Don't murder. Don't lie. Don't bear false witness. Don't steal. And truly," the youth says, "I have kept these since I was a child. I grew up Lutheran. I've never missed a day of church in my life. I have the Sunday school pins with the laurels and the hangy-dangy things to prove it. Perfect attendance year after year. I am confirmed, have the certificate. I am baptized, got the certificate. I have been to leadership training at my church. I have the certificate," right? But the thing is that if you have never really felt that you needed to be forgiven for anything, how will you ever comprehend grace? And that's why I'm telling you, as far as God's concerned, you and I deserve hell. Because we can't live up to his standard. Because we fail and we fall short. I want to tell you that there was a very difficult time in my life when I was a very different person. I know it's hard to imagine, but I used to be tall. I used to be thin. I used to be blonde. I used to be tan. It was different. I valued different things. And I explored a different path. I won't tell you why or how or whatever, because I don't want to excite anyone's imagination or lead you on the wrong path. I can just tell you that sometimes it was really big. Like, having to borrow money to leave certain islands and so on. Do you understand what I mean? I mean, it was big. And there were other times when I was not a nice person. And one night I was overcome because I hated who I was. And there was nothing good in me. And I knew it. And I understood that I was the author of my misery and the misery of those around me. And that night, I prayed a prayer that was similar to this. "I'm a wreck. I'm in the ditch. I'm on fire. I'm drowning in a couple inches of water. God, it's ridiculous, and I've made a mess of everything that you've given to me. So why don't you take what's left? And if you can use it, use it. And if you can't, just put me out of my misery now." And that night I woke up, when I felt him come into my heart and take it out, and wring it out like a sponge, filled with nasty, dirty, filthy water. And it became all pink, clean, happy. Arteries all unplugged. Then went back in. then I woke up hearing the words of Amazing Grace. It was grace that taught my heart to fear, because I had to come to the point where I understood that there was nothing left, that I had no hope apart from God. And it was grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. And you see, I think that moments like that, they're necessary for us. Why? Because we need to understand how great the grace of God is. Because even though the disciples ran away, still they were forgiven. And still they got to drink this cup. And you know what's really amazing about this cup? We get to drink it with Him in heaven. Isn't that going to be great? It's amazing. I also want you to know that this cup is hard. Because Jesus saves us for a purpose. And that purpose is that we should follow Him. And, you know, the thing is that I understand that my life is nothing apart from His. And I have to go wherever it is that He leads. And He doesn't lead to, you know, really awesome and comfortable places, which, you know, I am prone to want to desire for myself. He leads you into brokenness. I look at my life and I can tell you without any shadow of a doubt that there was no experience, good or bad, that was ever wasted, because it all comes back. And He grinds it up and it becomes the cement mix for building new things and for reaching new people. That's the kind of God that we have, but He's not an easy God to follow. He's drawn to the edges. He's drawn to the shadows. He's drawn to the people that we would not see normally. He's drawn to people that we would not choose to normally want to be around. But it's where He goes. And we follow with Him. And we do hard things. I want you to think about those 11 remaining disciples. And I want you to think that they drank from this cup of amazing and radical grace on the one hand, and this cup of hardship on the other. And they went on to change the world. 11 guys. Is that not amazing? And you know, Zion, Jesus gives us this cup to drink, and it's a cup of amazing grace. This is a cup of forgiveness, a cup of joy and love, and it is also a cup of hard things that He calls us to. But we know that whatever He calls us to, He goes with us, because we're following Him. We didn't go on our own. We simply followed where He went. The act of faith is simply to follow. I am at a point in my ministry, my life, where I now understand that I don't know anything. But I do know that when I don't know what to do, when I don't know what to say, the best thing for me to do is simply to show up, and something will happen. And God is all over it. My great sorrow for modern people and for the church is that somehow we've stopped showing up, because I think we don't want to do hard things. We've convinced ourselves, and it's very easy to do this, because I can think of 100 reasons not to do something, can't you? And it usually begins with, we should explore this further. Because the further you dig into where it is that He goes, the more excuses you will find for not going there. Could be quicksand. Poisonous snakes. Famine, peril, sword, danger. It's a mission trip that was canceled last spring by another organization because safety could not be guaranteed, and we laughed. Because who can guarantee your safety anywhere? And if God calls you, you should go. I think about John Dovin, who sleeps on the floor. gives all his money to buy rice for orphans. He's 70-some years old and ought to be sitting up, putting his feet up, you know, in whatever the Vietnamese equivalent of a rocking chair would be. But no. Because he follows Jesus onward. And he will until the day he dies, and that's not irresponsible. It's beautiful. Because we're called to do hard things, and because Jesus has promised to be with us and to never leave us or forsake us, and to be with us through the very end until we drink from this cup with him in the kingdom that is yet to come. That is who we are. We are in amazing company. When you come up for communion today, I want you to think about that. We are part of the fellowship of this cup. We are people who are redeemed by the blood that this cup represents, by the hardship and the trial of Jesus, and that's the amazing grace, and we share it. And see, here's the thing then, understanding that, you have to forgive each other. You have to forgive me. Because you have been forgiven. And you can't hold it back. And you can't keep it inside. And you can't put restrictions on other people that Jesus didn't put on you. Because this is what this is. This is the fellowship of this cup. And it is also the fellowship of people who do hard things. And maybe you've got hard things going on in your life. Drink from it, all of you. Because I want you to think about who drank from this cup first. Before he passed it to you, it was... Think about it. I said it at the other service, and I probably, I don't know, spook the church or something, but... This cup, Jesus drinks it and he passes it to you. Do you know what's in here then? All that stuff I told you about and Jesus spit. That's really cool. That's amazing. To drink the cup after Jesus and then he passes it to you and then, you know, pity the next guy because he's got Jesus spit, your spit now. Oh man, that's the way it goes. But isn't that what community is? Isn't that what it means to be one together in Christ? Isn't that what it means to be church together? Is the fact that whatever I've got, you've got. Whatever you've got, I've got. Because we drank from the one cup. If you don't have enough, what does it mean? It means we're all going to be inconvenienced to make sure that you do. Acts 2. 42, 44. It means that when you're cut, I bleed. When you rejoice, I rejoice. When you mourn, I mourn. And no, it's not convenient. And no, nobody wants to go down into the pit of grief. And if it's just a pastor, he's going to get stuck down there. But when you and I form the human chain and we go down to those places together, we epitomize what it means to be a church, a community of believers, and we also leave no one behind. That's the joy of this cup. Nobody gives left behind. There is no sinner among us whose sin is so great that he cannot receive forgiveness through the blood that this cup represents. And there is no task that we cannot accomplish, no matter how daunting, because of the power that's represented in this cup. The power of the resurrection to be able to do hard things. Sometimes it looks, I think, like we might lose, you know, and we're scared. Failure. Do you remember about Jesus? He was dead. And they took his lifeless corpse off the cross and they put it in the tomb and they rolled the stone in front of it and they put guards in there to make sure he'd stay dead. And remember, all the world took a big sigh of relief. You see, he's a poser. It's not who he said he was. It's over. And we could feel smug about our convictions and we could go on with our life pursuing our own ends. And on Easter Sunday, how God raised him again. Sometimes we're called to what looks like the end, but it's only an opportunity for God to be great and glorified. And think about what the world thinks when he sees a ragtag group of people like us being able to do great things, hard things, in his name. I'm going to close just by reading this. It's our value. I think it's number 10. Do hard things. This is from our Board of Spiritual Oversight president. Is it difficult? Check. High chance of failure? Check. High chance of inviting criticism? Check. What are we waiting for? It must be God calling us. How do you recognize a move of God? We believe it's because he calls you to do the impossible. And he calls you, and if you respond in faith, he provides the resources and the plans later. His chief goal seems to be to determine whether or not the church will step out in faith and follow where he leads. And we hope we will always be a church that is willing to put ourselves at risk for the sake of being obedient to what God wants to do in and through us. We understand that God might even call us to do something that ends in what looks like failure, but we remember Jesus, who died on a cross and was 3 days in the tomb, and his detractors thought that he had lost, but miraculously, the Father raised him from the grave, and 2,000 years later, we place our faith in his resurrection for our salvation.